So yeah, you're very welcome. My name's Rachel. I am a member of Coramila and I've been asked to chair this afternoon's panel discussion on finding community in the strangest of places. I'm joined by four great panel members. I'm really interested. I was going to come to this session, so it's nice to be. It's interesting how things work out in a place like Coramila. So I am going to introduce each of the panel members, and then everyone will have, they'll have an opportunity to speak for around 10 minutes on their story, and then we will just have a chat together. So Davey Phillip, is a founder member of the team behind the Clough Jordan, is that how you pronounce it?
Clough Jordan.
Clough Jordan Eco Village Project, and Cultivate, which is a sustainable Ireland cooperative, which was responsible for a number of networking and festival events, including the Green Area and Electric Picnic. He's also a catalyst for the transition movement, both in Ireland and internationally. And I'm going to let him.
Oh, I'm starting.
You can go ahead.
Okay, hello everyone. Yes, my name's Davey Phillip. I'm based in Clough Jordan, but I'm not Irish, as you can tell. I'm Scottish. I've lived here for 20 years. And I suppose I grew up in a community, a Presbyterian industrial community in the central belt of Scotland, where I first got a sense of community, in which I ran screaming from when I was 18 or 19 to the city, as most of us probably did, rebel a little against what was actually quite a healthy community in retrospect when I look back. My journey, I found community in some very unexpected places. I spent most of my teens and up till I was 28 as a professional skateboarder, and so found community in a subculture, an international subculture of mostly adolescence, really. It wasn't a healthy culture, but I learned so much. And there's something in it that resonates still. When I was 28, though, I left it all. I had, by that time, established some quite successful businesses and decided I didn't want anything to do with any of this. And went to India for a year and found community again in sort of the ashram communities. And I found something there that was really important, finding and connecting back to me and a bigger sense of me. I came back to Ireland, or not back to Ireland, I actually arrived in Ireland from a year and a half in Asia. And it was a difficult time because I had no sense of community. I was a little lost in what I do with this sort of aliveness of interconnectedness that I was bringing from my experience in India. What should I do? How, you know, what do you do with this? And without going into too much detail, I ended up studying as a mature student in Maynooth University, studied anthropology. And in my first few months there, we had sustainability and quite a whole systems approach to sustainability, where whenever I saw that, I realised that this is how I apply what I had a taste of in India, that holistic, interconnected, interdependentness of a reality. And that was 20 years ago, or 18 years ago now. So all I have done since I got that sustainability is how you apply this, is focused on sustainability, building sustainable community, helping people understand the need to transform, to transition to something different. So in 1999, I was part of a group of people that found ourselves in the community of Dublin Food Co-op, quite a healthy community, a consumer co-op of about 1,500 people, and got really involved in a community of protesters. We were protesting roads, we were protesting GM, we were trying to stop this and that. And it became clear to us that we actually needed to be more proactive and demonstrate and put our energy into what we were for. So it was quite a pivotal moment. And what was it we were for? Well, we were into the sustainability thing, but what is that and how do we communicate it? Well, actually, we'll have to build a place that people can visit and taste it and live it. And so in 1999, we launched a cooperative company called Sustainable Projects Ireland that was going to develop, very ambitious project, develop a large eco-village. We were inspired by this eco-village movement, fully featured settlements that we live, work, and learn in. And so in 1999, we launched it with a two-page manifesto of what we wanted to do. And it was quite surprising the people that stepped up to join us. By 2002, we'd identified land but reassessed what we were doing, and we realised it wasn't a new community, it wasn't a new village we needed to build, but but there were so many towns and villages in decline, why would we not join one in rural Ireland and help play a part in its regeneration? And that's what we did. We found Clogjordan. We bought a 67-acre estate that comes right into the main street of Clogjordan. And I'm not really going to tell that story here because I've got much longer time tomorrow, 8 o'clock, in the other space to tell that story. Although I'm framing that story just as a quick plug, surfing the waves of change, the art of commoning. So I'm really interested in how we build community, what the competencies we need to cooperate again. And I see it as a deficit that someone we've lost, the skills to actually work together, to co-create together, to co-produce together, to co-govern together, to take responsibility for where we find ourselves and the nurturing and well-being of that place. So I feel so privileged to be able to walk my talk. I live this. I don't do it at the weekends after a 9-to-5 job. I get to live it. Don't earn too much, but I have a rich life. In Clogjordan Eco Village, we're a community of communities. So there's now about 120 of us live in the eco neighbourhood, which is probably a more accurate definition of what it is. It's an eco neighbourhood, not an eco village. We're part of an old historical village called Clogjordan that, interestingly enough, for here used to be called Little Belfast. Why was it called Little Belfast? So the main church on the main street was the Church of Ireland Church, the Protestant Church, and the next church was the Methodist Church, and the next church around the corner was the Catholic Church. So when we arrived in 2002, 2003, we felt a huge sense of welcoming from this community, and we realised only afterwards it was because they had this sort of diversity of faith communities that when we arrived, it was like the new church had arrived, this eco-church. Oh yeah, come along, your space on the street for you as well. So we felt a real sense of welcome from this community, and still do. So there's now, as I said, about 120 of us, if you include the kid, in the neighbourhood, but we're seeing ourselves as part of the whole. And, you know, we are framing our project as a destination for learning. So it's a place to live, and that's really important. A lot of people come there to raise their kids or to retire with a sense of purpose, and a bit more stimulation than you might have in your senior years. But in that middle, that demographic like me, people that want to have and make a difference and have a bit more of an impact on what's happening in the world. So I think we found community in quite an unusual place, or not an unusual place. Rural Ireland is full of community. But an intentional community, or a community with intention to experiment and explore how we might build these competencies of working better together, what it is, what tools we have to govern ourselves in a different way, to reach decisions in a way that don't have to take a year to make a decision like most flat, green, lefty sort of type of organisations. That there is new approaches to using new tools to make decisions quickly. I'm not going to go into a lot of the detail, but I am fascinated by this. If anyone wants to discuss what's emerging in these sort of fields, I can talk about it for days. So what do we need? We need to build these competencies again to relate to each other if we're going to have communities, not just in strange places, but in every place. Community is a little contested term. I was thinking about it for the North, that when you say we're going to strengthen community, that could actually lead to more entrenchment rather than to an opening up and to a more collaborative and sharing approach. So, I know from our own community, we're a community of communities. It's not just everyone thinking the same. We've got different values, different worldviews, which actually brings a diversity that's strong and a strength rather than some places I visit eco-villages where everyone's of the same mind and have the same values. Actually, that's not going to accelerate sustainability, which was our objective. We wanted to mainstream and normalise these processes and technologies of sustainability and how we move quickly to be a community that actually can sustain itself but actually plays a role in solidarity with other communities and other places. So it's an extreme localization, but it's not turning our back on the rest of the world. It's a relocalization with empathy and solidarity with communities everywhere. So we need to quickly, I think, work out how we live on this planet without the impact, how we live on this planet together without the conflict, how we can rethink how we do almost everything, especially our basic needs. Food, how do we do that together? Energy, how do we do that together? Shelter, how do we do that together? How do we feed ourselves, house ourselves, and keep ourselves warm? And there's so many examples all over this island of people coming together to provide their energy, to think about how they might provide their housing, how they provide their food through food co-ops, community gardens, community-supported agriculture projects. All of these projects are commoning. It's the art of commoning. It's the art of working together to build a shared resource or to nurture a shared resource. And this is what I'm really interested in. How do we build that skill set, those capacities to actually build the build healthier communities or strengthen our communities in not just the unlikeliest of places, but everywhere, wherever we find ourselves. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Davey. That was really interesting. And I suppose that reflects a lot of the questions I think we have in Corrymeela at the moment around how we live well together, and which is our current theme. So thank you.
Sorry, I should have said Tipperary. It's in the middle of Ireland. It's a long way. From anywhere.
Okay, our next panel member is Matthew Dick, and he left a life of academia to focus on brewing. And my son goes to hip-hop class next door to where he brews. And so every so often when I'm dropping him down, there's a strong smell of hops. I'm drawn to go and have a pint. He is the founding member of Boundary Brewing, a Belfast-based cooperative. And he homebrewed for years before doing this, and he's a strong advocate for craft beer and all things palatable.
Thank you. I got a cold, so sorry about this. So I'm walking my dog one day. It's called Pepper. She's dead now, which is sad and a terrible way to start a story. But so walking my dog one day, and everything kind of about Boundary came to me at one moment for the first and only time in my life. Time stood still and everything kind of came to me and just hit me. And fortunately, I think I remembered most of it. So like the name, Boundary. So we're a cooperative called Boundary in Belfast. Our tone of voice online, the style of beers, the inspirations we should have, kind of where we should be in the price points compared to the market, and how we should approach the market. And I didn't even really know what the word market meant at the time. I had no business experience or anything like that. And that was about 3 years ago. So if we go back in time before that dog walk, I grew up South Belfast, pretty upper middle class, went to Methody. Yes. I wouldn't be as proud of that as you are, so that's cool. I was good. It was fine. But from a young age, as you do in the Malone Road in the summers, went to France, and mum and dad would have given me a wee bit of beer or wine from, you know, young teenage. And so from a really young age, I had an appreciation of alcohol that was quite healthy, I think. It was never really a means to an end for me at all. So when I kind of got to the 15, 16, 17-year-old stage and going to Lavery's, I was still the one drinking like Leffe and Hoegaarden while all my friends got smashed on bland, tasteless, fizzy, yellow crap. And it just never really made sense to me. And then on the other hand, I had loads of friends in Belgium. And I would go to Belgium at a similar young age. And the beer scene there is just electric. And it's even better now. And a lot of the great breweries there have gotten sad and sold out and changed and stuff. But that, if you could talk for days, so could I. And beer, so I won't go there. But so I had a relationship with beer and an approach to alcohol that was maybe different than a lot of what the culture brings us along on. And then I moved to the States. My wife's American, so I moved to Reno, Nevada, and lived there for 5-6 years. And the scene there is just electric for beer. It's light years ahead of us. So moved home 2010 and started studying. I thought I wanted to lecture theology. So did my master's and. At the same time, got into homebrewing because I moved home and there wasn't really any beer that was worth buying, to be honest. And that was sad. And I'm also OCD, so I got really into the brewing. There was like 8 of us that started, right? We all put in 50 quid or something. So we bought a lot of homebrew equipment for homebrewers. And they all like made three kits together with me, but after that they were just happy to drink the beer, so I just got totally carried away. And I was doing my master's from home mainly, but I was really just brewing at home and occasionally writing a paper. And like, if you ever homebrew, I was like checking the fermenter like six times a day, which don't do that ever. Just increases the chance of infections and all that kind of stuff. And really getting into the brewing and looking more and more into the idea and thought of opening a brewery. And kind of thought, you know, maybe I could do that together. I could lecture in the academic world and I could work at a brewery. And that was absolutely insane because both of those worlds are beyond full-time jobs in themselves. And it took me halfway through my PhD to realise that. So I was doing my master's and met Podrick Otuma, although I knew him a bit before that. We developed a friendship until one day he introduced me to this guy called Matt Scrimmager, who is a cooperative head. And our first conversation on the phone, I'll never forget it, because I wanted to open a brewery, and Matt wanted to start some cooperatives, and he didn't really seem to care what it was. He just wanted to do cooperatives, but why wouldn't you do it with beer if you could? So our first conversation on the phone, I'm literally, he's on speakerphone, I'm Googling, what is a cooperative? Because I didn't know, but if we go back to that moment I had with the dog, I was walking with the dog, and the logo and the artwork and the tone of voice online, all that came to me. But the strongest thing that came to me was I had to do this around a community. And there was two reasons for that. One was because my life, I've grown up in kind of a charismatic cross-community community in Belfast. And my experience with life, with love, with my relationship with Sheena, with my friends and my family, with my dog, with everything, was that life is better when it's enjoyed with others and when you share it with others. And it doesn't make it easier. In fact, it makes it harder. But it's better, it's deeper, it's more beautiful. And I think it's probably the way it's supposed to be. So that was one reason I just naturally probably wanted to share this idea of boundary with others. But the other was really strategic, because Northern Ireland is light years behind anywhere else in the craft beer market. And so if I was going to go to market with like 7% beers and try and sell them at a higher retail than any other beers, no one was really probably going to buy that in Northern Ireland. But if I had 447 people who owned the brewery with me, most of them have BT postcodes and would buy the beer, then that would give us a bit of momentum at the start. And so that was my idea of a business plan. I didn't even know what a business plan was at the time. I still don't tell anybody. And so we started this thing called Boundary. So we put a board together, and what that meant was Matt and Heidi and me and Sheena and three other random friends. Well, they weren't random. I chose them intentionally, but it was random. Kind of started meeting. Our first one was like we had babies around the table drinking beer inside at Hilden before their beer festival one year. And we put a board together and started planning. And then became legal after a couple of months. And then I took a job with a company called Brewbot. How am I doing for time? Sweet. Cool. Took a company with... So I was studying my master's, right? And then into my PhD. And I had that balance between, you know, do I do the academia? Do I do the brewery? Because I can't do both. It was always an easy decision. Because even when I was like studying at Queen's, I was on homebrew websites or on Twitter wasting time. Nothing sucks your soul like social media. That's true. Halfway through the PhD, I got offered a job from this company who developed like a robot that brews beer that you control with your phone. And so I went from lecturing in the Gospel of John to brewing beer. Well, it wasn't with the phone because it didn't work at the time. It still doesn't. You still haven't built it. To changing words from academia to like tech startup, Google, Twitter, Facebook world, like total different world. Then moved to Austin for the summer and went on a tech startup class and was like surrounded by some of the best entrepreneurs in the States. I don't really know what that word means or like it. It seems to usually mean you're just selfish and do things for yourself. I got a crash course in business and how to be good at that stuff. So I came home last November, last September, October, and quit my job at Brewbot, and I was like, right, if I don't do this thing called Boundary, I'm just going to explode, because I've been planning for about 2 or 3 years at that stage. And I think the board were probably getting quite frustrated with me, I'm not sure, because it had been a while. And we just went for it. So as a cooperative, we're owned by the members. So that means every member that bought in to the cooperative owns it equally. So if you invested 100 quid or if you invested 20 grand, you get the same one vote, which really screws with a lot of people's heads, but I think is really simply beautiful. So we opened our shares. We had a community share program. We were looking for £70,000, and we opened last December, which I was quite cautious about because it's December, and no one has money anyway, but they definitely don't have money in December because they're buying gifts. So we opened in December. We gave 5 weeks. We needed to raise 65 grand. And in a day, we raised 10 grand. And I was like, holy shit. Excuse my French. I was like, oh, that's friends and family network, first day, the momentum. But then by the second day, we had 20 grand. And by the third day, we had like 35 grand. And by day eight, we had 100 grand, 46 pounds. I don't know where the 46 quid came from. But 447 people invested. We raised 100 grand in 8 days, and we got a space in January, started brewing in March, and started selling in April. We're only a couple of months in. We sell out of like all the beer we make in an hour some days. We got interest from the States, from England, from Scotland, from down south, from Holland, from Australia. Don't know why Holland's more random than any of the others, but it is. And things are going great, and I don't think it could have really happened without doing it as a cooperative model. I think we'd be bankrupt by now already, and the cash flow would have bust us. But I think it's testimony to, if you do something beautiful and interesting and different and you're not an asshole, people are really drawn to that. Because in Northern Ireland, we're really just good at looking outside the windows and copying each other and kind of just being inspired by one another. And that's fine to a point, but we need more people to draw inspiration from further afield of this country, as great as it is. And that's partly what we've done with the beer, with the inspiration and the styles of beer that we're doing. They're different, and they're different than the other markets available in Northern Ireland. So that's us. I'm more interested in the conversation after.
Thank you very much, Matthew. I haven't had a boundary yet, but I'm looking forward. I'll nip into the brewery. This is the brewery next door. Okay, so it is my pleasure to introduce Liz Welty, Elizabeth Welty, who is a good friend and has been working in peace and conflict studies, capacity building and education for 18 years. Is it that long? But we're only 25. Throughout Ireland, Europe, and the United States.
I got started early.
She's a yoga teacher, and she seeks to empower students to be strong, flexible, and easy in their bodies, peaceful and clear in their minds, and playful in spirit. So, you're welcome.
Thanks very much. I think that all attests to the pantaloons I've got on today. I was like, I should get dressed up for the panel, but I was doing Dr. Susto's yoga this morning, so, you know, it's all part of the uniform, I would say. It's a real honor to be here, and I think the first time I ever came to Corrymeela was 17 years ago, and I've been volunteering and working here really since then, and it's what drew me back and back and back, and then there was a man and a job and, you know, other things that drew me back, but as I developed this project I'm going to tell you about, you'll really see how my experience at Corrymeela and what has been built here by the elders of this community has really influenced the way I've moved forward in creating community in unusual spaces. So the most recent time I came over to Northern Ireland and I started on a PhD in education and divided societies, and there was just this urge in me, knowing that I was going to go into this very cerebral time of intense study, that I wanted to do something specifically that was going to keep the body and the spirit playful, light, healthy, supple, all those things. And so as a gift to myself, I went and did a yoga teacher training and came back to Northern Ireland, was so excited to share. And I love education because it is as much, we are in a co-educational relationship. So I'm learning as much as I'm imparting, and that's always been my passion in education. And so got onto the mat, was so excited to get people to experience their education, experience their bodies, experience their spirits in this different way. So I started right when I got back from teacher training, just embarking on my PhD, and I'd rent out a community room and then put my little cup there and have people throw their coins in. So really probably for the first 6 months that I taught yoga, I was paying for the pleasure of teaching. break is I dragged my two best friends in. And I was like, oh, you get a wee discount there. So by the end of the night, I taught my yoga class and had made 4 pounds, right? And that chewed away at my 20-pound room rental. So, but from there, it really grew and grew, I suppose, this experience of going into the community center. And every group you meet, and educators and community leaders will know this, it's a different class every single time, depending on who's sitting before you and what you're able to gather and learn from. So we kept going, and then I started to build relationships with other yoga teachers, and we began a yoga cooperative. So we decided to get a space that we could share, mats that we could share, web space that we could share, and everybody paid in to the cooperative, and we wanted to offer a space. So here we go. Are you ready for this? See if this rings a bell for you. We wanted to start a yoga cooperative that was based on an ethos of welcome. A little plagiarization going on over there, but that's okay. But we wanted to make the space as inclusive as Corrymeela is, to feel as welcoming and as safe. So especially in Northern Ireland, correct me if I'm wrong, people are a little bit tentative. What is yoga? What is this going to mean? Are people going to ask me to do things that I'm uncomfortable with in my body, in my mind, and in my spirit? So how do you create a space that enables people to try something new in a different way than they've ever tried anything new? So we carried on like this, and our little cooperative got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Finally made my way through the PhD, but had to make that same choice, right? I was basically working 2 full-time jobs. I was working in the university as a postdoc, and my little cooperative had grown. Then it became a big girl business, right? And then it became a big, big girl business, because now we had 2 studios, and we were the largest yoga business in Northern Ireland. So the academia needed to be set aside so I could educate and lead this project that started as a little tiny project. And it's been very interesting, because obviously I'm coming from the States, and there's a lot of expression, there's a lot of yoga, there's a lot of mindfulness, there's a lot of mind-body practice that's offered there. But when I wanted to bring that into the context of Northern Ireland, growing up in Northern Ireland as I did in Corrymeela, I was very nervous. I didn't know how people were going to react to anything that was perceived as spiritual. And I got really nervous because I didn't want to om in my classes, because people were going to think it's weird and it was going to make them uncomfortable and all of this stuff. So I had to really figure out what worked in this culture. So I brought all of my knowledge, all of my best educational tools onto the mat, and we just tried out different things. So out of that experience of working with so many different kinds of people, bringing on different yoga teachers from all different places, we had to create an explicit shared culture of what these studios, of what these places were going to look like. So again, this is going to ring a bell for y'all. One of the things that we said was obviously these studios are based on an ethos of welcome, and we want to create a safe space for people to engage in transformation. Right? So how do we do that? Second one of our explicit sort of cultural pillars is we do not speak disparagingly of any other culture, practice, methodology, or studio anywhere, because it's just bad crack, right? So you can get a little bitchiness here and there, people talking about this yoga teacher and this yoga teacher and this person, not in our space. It's just not cool. Right? This is a space for everyone to try new things and for us to encourage all of these different kinds of things. So we set up these very explicit pillars of our culture, right? Very much inspired by this community, because it's the only one I knew that was intentional in this way. So we made this very explicit. We called it our Memorandum of Understanding. Everybody who got involved with our studio, we discussed these ideas with, what it looked like, what it meant, both as you greeted every single new person who crossed the door, and then what it meant when you were actually guiding them through a practice that might feel a little unusual. Okay? So a few things I've learned about teaching yoga in Northern Ireland. Welcome is so important. absolutely looking someone in the eyes, asking how they're doing, and welcoming them exactly as they are, right? No matter gender, age, experience, size, shape, ability, anything, you come on in, right? The second thing I learned is that people like to laugh. So if you can crack a joke or make fun of yourself or fall over or do those things, that it really resonates, right? It puts everybody at ease. A little laughter. People want to be serious and they want to dive in deep, but it's like you have to keep that lightness and the playfulness as part of it. So sometimes the Yanks take themselves a wee bit too seriously, so you're not going to have that same playfulness that you might find in a yoga class in Northern Ireland. And the third thing I learned is I got really, really nervous about the ohms. As you know, come from a peace and conflict studies background, didn't want anyone to feel uneasy or felt like their spiritual orientation was threatened at all by what they might have perceived as yoga being a religion or a spirituality, which a lot of times we would call it a philosophy, but it's always under debate. It's always evolving. I actually found that people loved the om. They actually loved the om. I don't know, is it singing together? Is it speaking together? So if you can take some of that connotation out of it and just be like, this is about the good vibrations. So I really encourage y'all to get into the shower and let the omen rip, right? And just notice, don't worry about the sound, but just feel the vibrations in your body. Because when those vibrations are going, it's hard to think about stuff that's not so fun or not so nice. It just gives you that moment, a little shift. So those are some of the things that I've learned. And now we are constantly figuring out how to keep the integrity of our community and to keep that very special connection and that atmosphere. And so it's interesting because just recently in our studios, I don't know if it's the wet July or what's going on. A little bit of bitchiness, a little nya-nya-nya-nya, a little people talking about it, bringing that sort of clickiness into our studios. So as the leader, I had to get up and just say, remind people why you fell in love with this studio, with this space to learn and grow and change. And just remind people that we are all here, we are all responsible for creating this space where people feel safe to transform, to be healthy, to learn, to grow. And remind them as well that there is no place for disparaging talk about other practitioners, studios, practices, right? That this is a place where we are interested in learning from all different traditions and all different things and see that how it can inspire us and change us on the mat. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, Liz. As a regular attender now at one of the studios, I highly recommend it.
What's the flow studio?
There's some. There's a few floating around. There's one in the Malone Road and one in Cathedral Quarter. I'll take commission. That's my free class sorted for next week.
Equally important, where's the Boundary Brewery?
Yes, exactly. That's East Belfast. I definitely should be getting a cut here. That's East Belfast. What's the place called again? Portview Trading Centre. Okay, so our last panel member before we move into our discussion is Ruth Gray, and Ruth has just recently, a new friend, has joined Corrymeela and is the inspiration behind the Camper Van of Dreams, which you'll have seen, the VW van outside. And it's a space where people are empowered to dream and to speak those dreams aloud, taking the first steps towards making their own dreams a reality.
Well, thank you very much. I've heard a lot of passion already today, and I feel in fantastic company. As these guys would talk about community and yoga and brewing, I think if I was going to talk about something for hours, it might be breakdowns, but I might, which we had one on the way to Corrymeela. But I'm going to just talk a wee bit about the journey of how the camper has come to be the camper of dreams. Charles Brewer said, "A new idea is delicate. It can be killed by a sneer or a yawn. It can be stabbed to death by a frown on the right man's brow. The fire of imagination, risk and possibility is often extinguished by our peers or unfortunately our loved ones. Until these repeated dismissals are preempted in our hearts, and with the dulling of our dreams, we are diminished." Listening to an American activist, social activist Jim Wallace, in Belfast a few years ago, talking on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, he posed the challenging question, of what has happened to the desire for the common good, and how society's major institutions, politicians, leaders, and media are failing in promoting cultural values of community, stewardship, and self-sacrifice. He went on to speak of his involvement in grassroots activism, of this which is deeply rooted in vision, by individuals taking a risk, stepping back, reflecting and dreaming, and for communities to collectively work towards these dreams. And by contrast, although listening to the panel today, this may not be quite true, I was struck by the lack of collective imagination and dreaming within our societies, and a seed was planted. Having worked as a dentist in drug treatment centres, homeless hostels and prisons for 15 years, I'm really acutely aware of the power of hope, dignity and belief in people's lives, and how often in institutions and hard places, hope and possibilities are not nurtured. As Desmond Tutu once said, hope is being able to see that there is light despite all the darkness. And in response to this, I felt a need to start to become an encourager, to create an intentional space for hope. Driving our 1973 camper van is always an adventure and never predictable. It's aged Simon here years, I think. It brings lightness to the communities that we drive through. A shriek of excitement, a wave, and a glance of nostalgia. The cheer of the collective push after the inevitable breakdown. It's true, it brings people together all the time. And a moment of possibility, a reawakening. In 2014, Simon and I decided to turn our camper van into an interactive installation, to park it up somewhere and create a space for people to find acceptance and courage to speak their dreams. And this was premised on a theory that Claire Humphrey here actually shared with me, that when someone declares an aspiration, it becomes a possibility that they can then live into. When people have the courage to enter the camper, their dreams are spoken into a microphone in the safe confessional parlour of the van. But these are then transmitted via our rooftop megaphone into the street or the playground, and the whole area is filled with audible aspirations of new possibilities. Each dream is tweeted for those who tweet so they can reconnect, and recorded on ribbons, which are tied on our dream catcher, which you can see out in the field there. And the dream catcher is a visual installation of the collective dreams of the community of people. Over 700 people have entered the van this year and have dreamed of love, travel, creativity and an end to sorrow. On culture night, of owning an ice cream van, starting a deli, singing in public and divorcing well. From the Human Rights Festival for Father's Rights, Autism Awareness, Less Traffic on Our Streets and For No One to Be Hungry. On retreat in Ballydugan of Community, Hospitality and Living Well. And then recently we had an amazing experience of going to Cliftonville Integrated School in North Belfast. And after a week of the children looking at hopes and dreams for Belfast, the children entered the van and spoke profoundly about an end to fighting and protest on their streets. Politicians who would talk to each other, that there would be no more dark corners, that those with money would learn to share. And these are primary school children's dreams. They dared to dream hope for themselves and for the city. And it was humbling, moving and inspirational. The children and teachers have taken these dreams and are starting on a journey collectively of change for their school, their neighbourhood and they hope for Belfast. Yesterday in Aperture, in the rain, we had some dreamers and they dreamed of clean drinking water for all, new hairstyles, to be good musicians, to be a children's author, to age well, that people around the world would thrive. And there's many more dreams that are on the dream catcher on the ribbons. So what's next for the camper's journey? Well, to be honest, we are winging it. We're never quite sure. All ideas are very, very welcome. But we do have the promise of more summer festivals when the summer arrives. Also collaboration with the Eden Project's Big Lunch. And one of my dreams would be to park the camper outside of Stormont to facilitate political reimagining. And I would really love to do it, but I don't know how. So if anyone has ideas. But our aim is to bring the camper to the hard places where dreaming and hope is much needed. To other schools, breakfast clubs, mental health units, the prison where I work, and community groups. We are hoping for creative and collective collaboration. To develop workshops and sessions for individuals and communities to spend time reflecting, recognising when and why their dreams were snatched and what their hearts long for. For the camper to create a space for hope, a catalyst for belief, for communities in search of the common good. So at this festival, and I think, to be honest, before I stood up, I was pretty inspired by what I've heard. But I would challenge us all to start dreaming again, to be still and to listen, to remember and connect with our desires, to imagine things differently and believe in possibility. In the precious words of Margaret Mead, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. We in the camper believe this is the revolution of the heart, the revolution of collective hopes and dreams. So thank you, and we're on straight after, hence the garb. Please come, take a risk, enter the van, and you never know where it'll go. Thank you very much.